I went to search the Barish Estranza transport shuttle. I wasn't expecting to find anything, but it was on the action list, so why not? Art had notified Arata that while it was working on the engines, it was also prepping a squad of Pathfinders just in case we had to search the colony planet. I hope it didn't come to that. I don't like planets. Pathfinders are like drones for space, basically. Active scanners that would zip around the planet collecting environmental information and terrain imaging, plus looking for comm signals, possible energy sources, and whatever might be planning to kill us. It's the kind of thing that my ex-owner bond company did via satellite when they prepared to issue safety bonds for a newly opened survey planet. Except the company's satellite would mainly be mapping the entire planet, and the Pathfinders would be looking for potential locations where Art's crew might be. They were really expensive, not something normal survey teams had access to. Arata was impressed. You couldn't rent Pathfinders from the company, not only because of the cost. They made planetary exploration safer and more targeted, so therefore less need for massive bond companies to rent you all sorts of expensive planetary exploration gear and sell you expensive safety bonds. I was monitoring Tiago's casual conversation with Elytra while the med platform was doing a deep scan on her. Oversay was in the maintenance bay reassembling the repair drone I had found in engineering so it could start repairing the other damaged drones. Arata was reviewing the scans of the alien engine remnant, but everything that was left of it seemed to be melting or decomposing, so most of the data was garbage. As Oversay pointed out, the thing was illegal to have anyway, so if it melted completely, it would be for the best, but it looked like it was still going to leave a residue that would have to be scraped off Art's engines. Rati was shepherding a biohazard cleaning unit through the corridors and picking up pieces of dead target drones. Amina followed me to the shuttle, dragging her feet. She really needed to sleep. I hadn't heard anything from Arata about it, so I put humans need to take rest periods on the general action list. Up in the central corridor, Rati saw it and muttered, "Please, yes, soon." I did a brief visual check on both of Art's shuttles, just to verify that they were empty and hadn't been tampered with. The Barish Estranza shuttle was parked inside the same docking module, attached to a module lock, which had an extendable tube to enclose the hatch. Art had said there was no one inside the shuttle and no active bot pilot, but I made Amina hang back down the corridor with her assigned drones while I approached. The hatch was sealed, but not code-locked, which made sense when we thought Elytra and Ross were telling the truth about being captured, trying to escape from their doomed transport. Now that we were certain it hadn't happened that way, who the hell knew? Art had cut the shuttle off from the feed. I touched the lock cautiously. Considering the inactive state of its onboard systems, I wasn't expecting alien killware or a sentient virus or something else unspecified to leap across and infect me. But the fact remained that something had happened to Art, despite all its protections, and alien killware was still a possibility. I still couldn't pick up any feed activity, so I pushed up one sleeve and adjusted my energy weapon to deliver a pulse that caused the seal to disengage. The hatch slid open, releasing a puff of slightly stale air. It didn't have the algae growth medium smell associated with the targets. In fact, it had traces of the dirty sock smell associated with humans. But then, an absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, or past absence. Whatever, you know what I mean. I used my own scan, making sure there was no movement or active weapons inside, and stepped in. The shuttle wasn't a model I had been in before, but the configuration was similar to a standard transport shuttle. It was small, sized for 10 humans at most. No cabins, a toilet facility that folded out from the bulkhead. Ugh. The individual seats were in a spiral in the main compartment, so they would have to be cycled around to release each passenger for disembarking. It was obviously meant for short trips between ships or from ship to station. The cockpit had a seat for a human pilot next to the currently absent bot pilot's interface console. The upholstery showed signs of ordinary wear and tear. The single passenger compartment was generally clean, but there were scuff marks on the panels and padding. There was only a 0.01% chance it had been constructed as a trap by an alien intelligence. It was a theory, okay? On our private feed connection, Amina said, "Is it empty? Is there anything strange in it? Can I come closer?" "You can come to the hatch, but not inside." I started searching for physical evidence. I would need to check all the storage compartments, anywhere there might be a hidden space that could conceal something. The drive housing still had the factory seal from its last maintenance check, so it probably hadn't been infected with illegal alien remnant technology. I'd have to break the seal and do a visual inspection anyway, just to be certain. I also needed to pull the logs, but I'd have to do it via a display surface. Even with an inert operating system, I didn't want to take any chances. Amina came up to the hatch and leaned inside to look around.
"If you need me to do anything, I can do it."
I pinged her feed to acknowledge. She watched me search for 7 minutes and 40 seconds, then said,
"Can I ask you a question?"
I never know how to answer this. Should I go with my first impulse, which is always no, or just give in to the inevitable? I said, "Is it contract relevant?" Big adolescent human sigh noise.
"I just want to understand something."
I gave in to the inevitable. "Yes." She hesitated.
"Right. So my second mom really didn't ask you to break up me and Marn?"
I had answered that question already, back when it happened. I could get mad at her asking it again, but granted, I do lie a lot. "I wasn't lying to you. She doesn't know anything about it unless you told her." I finished the search of the cabin and pinged Art. It generated a display surface with a disabled feed interface, so it couldn't transmit anything that might be in the shuttle's systems to Art, me, or anything else. Amina still had questions.
"Then why did you do it? You didn't... you don't... care about me. You didn't really even know me then."
"Why does Art like adolescent humans? This was exhausting. I have files on all the members of Dr. Mensa's family and their associates. I alerted on Marn because I ran threat assessments on all humans and augmented humans attempting to approach or form new relationships with Dr. Mensa or her family or associates after the Grey Chris incident. Marn registered as a threat to you." Amina thought about that while I made a connection between the console and the sequestered display surface. Then I started to run the shuttle's raw log files on the display, filtering out anything that wasn't text. I was recording the information visually, and then I could convert it back to data fields and search it more quickly. That way we'd get the log information without any underlying code that might be hidden in it. There are visual elements that could cause me problems, but I could screen for those, and granted, the chances that the log file might be protected against a SEC unit doing a visual download were running under 5%. I know, I'm paranoid, but that's how I've avoided being rendered for spare parts all this time. Amina said slowly,
"I guess if he wasn't, he would have wanted to explain himself instead of running off and refusing to speak to me again."
As far as my threat assessment was concerned, running off and never seeing her again was an excellent result. I was pretty sure Amina wouldn't want to hear that, though. She continued,
"I thought he was nice. I know at the time I said I knew what I was doing, but I'm actually not very good at meeting new people."
I knew from threat assessments on Rati's associates that he had a lot of relationships with all genders of humans and augmented humans, and he and they all seemed very happy about it. Amina should ask him for advice. I didn't think she wanted to hear that, either. Then Amina said,
Do you love my second mother? Tiago thinks so.
I should have known this was going to turn into an interrogation. I said, not the way he thinks. Her face went all dubious.
I don't think you know what he thinks.
He doesn't know what I think either, so there. I was distracted, converting a dumpload of raw log info from a visual image back into searchable data, and if I got the fields wrong, it was going to be a giant mess. I probably should have just stopped talking, but I didn't want to hurt Amina's feelings. I said, your second mother is... Client wasn't the right word, not anymore. My teammate. I could see I had to clarify. It was really hard finding the right words. Before your second mother, I had never been an actual member of a team before, just an... Amina finished. An appliance for a team. That was it. Yes.
I see. Thank you for letting me ask you questions.
Art must be recovering because it had to butt in with, tell her you care about her. Use those words. Don't tell her you'll eviscerate anything that tries to hurt her. Art, fuck off. The thing Art has in common with human adolescence is that it doesn't like to hear the word no either. It persisted. Tell her. It's true. Just say it. Human adolescents need to hear it from their caretakers. I'm not a caretaker, I told Art. I finished the log conversion and checked my drone view of Amina. She was leaning in the hatchway, her head propped on the seal buffer. That isn't a good place to put your head, just FYI. From her expression, she was either falling asleep or deep in thought, or possibly both. I said, you need to sleep. She yawned.
Okay, third mom.
Arata finally ordered the others to take a rest period, though it took her a while to really understand that Art and I would still be active, and there was no reason for the humans to take shifts. I finally had to tell her that I had a list of things I needed to get done, and it would go much faster if they would all stay in one place and shut up for a while, and sleeping was the most efficient use of that time. Oversay had finished repairing the repair drone and sent it off to begin the rebuilds of Art's other drones. She was sleeping on a couch in the lounge next to the galley with Rati, who had finished the biohazard cleanup. There was snoring. Arata was sleeping in one of the station chairs on the control deck. They're very comfortable, so it's not as bad as it sounds. The medical scans had finished, and Tiago walked Elytra back to her bunk room. He hadn't gotten much more out of her than Amina had, though his questions were more subtle. With his prompting, Elytra had gone over her augment clock and was now severely confused. It showed their transport had been in this system for 43 Corporation Standard Days. She was certain that was wrong. It was more support for the theory that Elytra had undergone some kind of memory manipulation. The initial scan analysis showed no genetic manipulation, no hidden devices or non-human biologicals. All my remaining drones were on sentry duty, but I made Amina go to an unused bunk room near the galley because it was easier to defend if we were attacked by something. It was unlikely, but so was everything unexpected that had happened so far. My risk assessment module had given up generating reports 3 hours ago. Amina tried to just lie down on the bare bunk and pillow her head on the sealed bedding pack, but I made her get up and unfold it and do it right.
You're mean, she groaned.
I opened another bedding pack so my bunk would be more comfortable to sit on. I had a lot of coding and analysis to do, so I wouldn't be caught unprepared again. I needed to create workarounds for the drone-resistant camouflage on the target drones and countermeasures for the target's helmets and gear. I also needed to anticipate how target control system would countermeasure my countermeasures so I wouldn't be screwed by an on-the-fly software update. I needed to analyze the solid-state screen device and find out if it really was a pre-Corporation RIM relic, and I had to analyze the new data files I had just created from the shuttle's logs. I pulled in the data Rati had uploaded to the feed during his pathology examinations and the scans of the target's suits and helmets. Oversay had also done some helpful hardware analysis of the target drones. Then I got my queries and processes running so I could get started on the code. I also split off an input and started Worldhoppers Episode 1. I'd seen it before, lots of times before, so I didn't need to give it my full attention. I really, really wanted some time to pull a new show out of long-term storage and watch a few episodes so I could really relax, but Worldhoppers in background would help. It was also bait. After 27 minutes, it worked. I was aware of art looming in my feed. Imagine sitting in front of a display surface and someone 8 times your size shoulders in and sits in the chair with you. It was watching Worldhoppers, and also backseat driving my coding and doing its own analysis of the data. The solid-state screen device does resemble known schematics of pre-Corporation RIM technology, Art reported, showing me a scan and the matching examples. But it is not a factory-built unit. It was assembled from components gleaned from other devices of similar age. No trace of alien remnant or known strange synthetics detected. That made sense. It could have been a replacement unit built by humans in the pre-Corporation RIM colony, or a unit built by the later abandoned corporate humans with parts desperately scavenged from the old colony as their own tech resources failed and they struggled to survive. Yeah, corporations suck. I liked the code we were coming up with, but I didn't think it was enough. None of it was making my threat assessment stats look any better. I told Art, "Everything we're doing is defensive. We need an attack." "I've considered constructing a killware assault, but the data I managed to retain from target control system suggests it would be ineffective." Art displayed some analysis for me. "Both Rati and Oversay have theorized that some elements of the target's pre-Corporation RIM technology, for example, the implants, may be acting as receivers for esoteric alien remnant tech, like the object that affected my drive. A standard killware assault on the pre-CR systems would not be able to take into account the alien system, not unless it was variable and could alter its behavior based on the protections and obstructions it encounters. I can't code that with the resources I have available." It was talking about something similar to the self-aware virus that Graycris and Palisade Security had deployed against the company gunship, where I'd crashed myself and nearly wrecked my memory archive helping the bot pilot fight it off. Which gave me an idea, but I didn't know if it was something we could implement. Then Tiago crossed through the galley, came down our corridor, and leaned in the doorway. Watching him through Art's camera view, I saw him glance at Amina, who at the moment was an inert pile of limbs under a blanket with a pillow jammed into her face. Humans do everything weird, including rest. Then he looked at me. Keeping his voice low, he said, "May I join you?" Art engaged the sound privacy field on Amina's bunk. I thought about saying no, but I thought he wanted to sleep on one of the bunks within sight of Amina because he didn't trust me to take care of her. So I marked my killware idea as save for later and said, "Yes." He sat down on the bunk across from me, pulled the bedding pack out from under it, but then set it aside. "Oh, good. We're going to have a chat." "If you have a moment, I was hoping we could talk," he said. I could have said that I didn't have a moment, what with writing code to save humans from whatever the stupid targets were. But I did have a moment. Art had constructed a simulation of the software fix that had protected the target's helmets and gear from my drone strikes, and was running tests of my new targeting code for my drones. The target drone's camouflage was harder to crack due to being a physical effect rather than something caused by signal interference. None of the filters I'd come up with for the drone's scan or targeting functions would work, at least according to the simulations. Continuing to ram my head into that particular wall wasn't going to get me anywhere until I thought up an alternate approach. So instead of being an asshole, I just said, "Go ahead." He said, "I know you don't believe it, but I was glad you came along on this survey." Oh, please. I could have played the audio recording I had of what he had said to Dr. Mensa about me, but that was a little incriminating with the whole listening to private conversations in secured spaces and personal dwellings thing. I said, "So, you didn't have serious reservations?" There was that little flash of surprise some humans have when I say something that doesn't sound like what their idea of a sec unit should say. He said slowly, "I did." It had been too long for a human to remember what he had said verbatim, and he didn't know I was quoting him. Still, his eyes narrowed a little. "And I know you've saved our lives." He hesitated. There was an unvoiced but on the end of that sentence. I didn't want to spend a lot of time on this, so I said, "But you don't like the way I did it." His gaze went hard, and he said, "I don't. And I don't like the fact that Amina saw you do it. But that's not the problem." On our private connection, Art said, "Don't ask the question unless you already know the answer." Right. So I didn't listen to Art. I said, "What problem?" Art did the feed equivalent of rolling its eyes and started another episode of World Hoppers. Tiago said, "You have leverage over Ada." That one got me. Fortunately, Art was keeping track of the processes, so I didn't screw up the data analysis. It also provided a definition of the word leverage. "I know what it means," I told Art privately. And I did, but not the way Tiago meant, I think. I said, "I don't tell Dr. Mensa what to do." Tiago's jaw went tight. "I'm sure you didn't, but she's afraid to carry out her duties as council leader. She won't apply to continue her term. That's because of you. You've made her afraid of shadows. She never needed security before you came to preservation. Now she thinks she can't do her job without it." There were so many things wrong and unfair and yet true about that, I started dropping inputs. Art picked them up and transferred them to our shared workspace. I said, "I didn't come to preservation. I was brought there in an inactive state after incurring a catastrophic failure while saving Dr. Mensa's life." "I know that." Tiago waved a hand in frustration. "I'm saying..." No, I get to talk now. "There was a security threat. After Dr. Mensa returned to Preservation Station, 3 Grey Chris operatives were sent to kill her. They failed, but there was a 65% chance that more operatives would be sent. That percentage started to fall after the Bond Company destroyed Palisade Security and all of Grey Chris's operational facilities. It was Grey Chris's own fault for ordering Palisade Security to attack an expensive company gunship, and Palisade's fault for escalating past standard operational parameters. But try telling Grey Chris that. And it wasn't like the company was afraid of Grey Chris, but they had to teach them a lesson. The lesson was, if you're going to fuck with something bigger and meaner than you, use a quick targeted attack and then run away really fast. This is the way I always try to operate, too. Gray Chris's attack had not been quick and targeted, and they had failed to run away effectively. Tiago had his mouth open, but I was still talking. There was, and is, still a potential danger from individual dependents or employees of Gray Chris, but threat assessment determined that the percentage is low enough for Dr. Mensa to resume normal activities with the assistance of Preservation Station security. It took Tiago 14 seconds to digest that. There was an attack? Why didn't she tell us? It would have been in the news stream. I pulled the video from my archive and quickly edited in the views from the station security helmet cams and the one lousy security cam in the lobby of the council offices on station. Art studied it curiously. I sent it to autoplay in Tiago's feed. His gaze went distant, then startled, then increasingly appalled. Art watched the full video, running it back and forth. I had sent Tiago the part where I was on top of the council table trying to snap Hostile One's neck, while Hostile Two was on my back, stabbing the absolute crap out of me. Six station security officers were draped around the room in various states of consciousness, with Officer Tiffany, the only one still functional, hanging on to the stabbing arm of Hostile Two and punching him repeatedly in the head. Art commented, "What is that human stabbing you with?" "Part of a broken chair." "They're sec units?" Tiago asked, horrified. I can see why he might think that. I said, "They're augmented humans who were chemically enhanced. They don't feel pain. Their reflexes and reaction times are accelerated. They have the physical strength of a sec unit, but not the feed connectivity or processing capacity. So they're harder to detect, and even more disposable." To be fair, at this point Gray Chris probably couldn't get any other security company's license to produce and or deploy sec units to contract with them. Between the high-risk assessment and the lack of operating funds and the cheating, attacking contract partners, Gray Chris wasn't a good client. Tiago took a breath, made himself calm down. "But they won't send anyone else? You said the threat percentage dropped." "It's at an acceptable level. And it hadn't been easy to get it to that level either." Tiago watched me with a concentrated intensity I didn't like. Art's camera didn't have a full-face view, but it was obvious even with the angle. "Then why did she decide not to take a second term?" "She didn't quit because she was afraid, you asshole. She quit because she needs to start the trauma support treatment at Central Medical. She didn't tell anyone in her extended family because being taken hostage..." In our private connection, Art said, "Stop." Art has different ways of telling you to stop doing what you're doing, with different threat levels, and this was toward the top of the list. I stopped. Art explained, "You're violating her privacy." I was pissed off, because of course Art was right. I said, "What do you know about it?" "My med system is certified in emotional support and trauma recovery." Ugh. Art did know everything. It was so annoying. I finished. "She wanted me to go on Arada's survey. I told her I would, but she had to agree to start the treatment. That was the leverage I had." He was still watching me, and I couldn't tell if he believed me. His expression was conflicted, and I think he was still shocked at the recording. It had looped through to the end of the clip where stupid Hostile One finally went inert, and I rolled myself, Hostile Two, and Tiffany off the table. Now Hostile Two was trying to strangle Tiffany, and I was prying him off her. Art said aloud, in its polite but actually not a suggestion voice, "We have work to do, Tiago, and you're missing your rest period. Perhaps you should go." It startled Tiago, but he pushed to his feet. He said, "You're right. I'll go." I stopped the clip and watched him on Art's cameras. He went back to the galley lounge and took one of the other couches. He sat there for a while, rubbing his face, then got up to get water from the galley and take a medication tab. "What is that?" I asked Art. "A mild pain reliever for headaches and muscle discomfort." When Tiago went to lie down on the couch, I relaxed a little. He had thought I was taking advantage of Dr. Mensa? I still wasn't even sure what he meant. Did he think I was making her feel sorry for me? Hey, I hadn't asked her to buy me. I hadn't even been there when it happened. I'd been still stuck in a cubicle in reconstruction at that point. I wish I could feel all vindicated, but I didn't think that confrontation had gone well for either me or Tiago. I think he knew now that his view of the situation was inaccurate, but I had gotten mad and stupidly admitted to blackmailing Dr. Mensa to go start the trauma treatment. So, I didn't know what was going to happen if, you know, we survived and stuff and got back to preservation. Like, I needed something else to worry about right now. Art said, "You haven't seen the obvious solution to the target drone camouflage problem." "Obvious?" I said. I know, I was just making it worse. Art wouldn't have framed it that way if it wasn't something that was going to make me feel like an idiot for missing. Art said, "Modify your drones with a camouflage field that will display the same interference pattern as the target's helmets and gear. They still won't be able to strike the target drones, but then your supply is so limited that attack is now no longer viable." Well, now I feel even more stupid. Art said, "You have time for a recharge cycle." I was going to tell it I didn't need one, and I really didn't. But I knew what I did need. I shifted everything over to our shared workspace and pulled up the first episode of Time Stream Defenders Orion. I asked Art, "Do you want Worldhoppers or something new?" Art considered, poking thoughtfully at the tag data for the new show. It said, "New, as long as it's not realistic." I downloaded Time Stream Defenders Orion off the Preservation Media Archives because it was pretty much the opposite of the whole concept of realistic. I started the first episode. We watched it while Art finished our code, occasionally sending sections to me to check over. Possibly it was humoring me. Art might still have memory archive gaps, but there was nothing wrong with its other functions. 26 minutes to the end of the designated rest period, Art said, "Using the data from the shuttle, I've located one of the Bearish Estranza vessels. My engine repairs are complete, and I am moving to intercept." Helpme.file, excerpt 3. Section from interview Bharadwaj, 108257394.
"It's normal to feel conflict. You were part of something for a long time. You hate it, and it was a terrible thing, but it created you, and you were part of it."
Session redacted. File detached from main narrative. I was sitting on top of Hostile 2 to make sure he was dead. He had been apparently dead at least twice, so this wasn't misplaced caution. Tiffany was on her knees beside me, her weapon pointed at his head. "You're too close," I told her. She looked at me, the skin around her eyes so swollen and puffy I'm not sure how well she could see. Then she edged back out of potential arm's reach. Behind me in the one stupid security camera, I saw the human second response team and their medical assistance bots belatedly crash through the door. I checked the time and wow. Scratch that belatedly. This had been a fast incident, even by SEC unit standards of fast. The Preservation Council meeting room was a big oval, with a long table in the middle, the walls lined with tall, narrow windows, two entrances, exits on either end of the room. The one the second response team had come through led to the foyers and station government's public offices, where humans came to take care of things that couldn't be taken care of on the feed, I guess. I actually had no idea. The other door led into the private offices where the occupants of the council room had managed to evacuate to when the incident occurred. Senior Officer Inda circled around the table and knelt down where I could see her. She said, "Is that person dead?" "Probably, but there's a 17% chance he might revive," I said. Tiffany, her voice a strained rasp, said,
"He came back twice. We need a containment unit."
Inda's brow furrowed.
"On the way."
She reached over to Tiffany and carefully coaxed the weapon out of her hands.
"You're off duty now, officer."
Tiffany said,
"Yes, senior,"
and folded over onto the floor. "She's had a hard day," I told Inda.
"I inferred that."
Inda tapped her feed, and a spidery-legged medical bot picked its way past me to crouch beside Tiffany. Making comforting noises, it scanned her and immediately injected her with something. Inda said,
"You need medical assistance, too."
I had a stab wound so large you could see the metal of my interior structure, but Senior Inda was too polite to mention it. The medical bot extended a delicate sensor limb toward me. On the feed, I told it anything it touched me with would get torn off and thrown across the room. It pulled the limb back and used it to check Hostile 2 instead.
"Is there any hope for the subject?"
Inda jerked her chin toward Hostile 2. I didn't think there had been a person inside Hostile 2 since before the first time we killed him. Probably not. I stayed in position until containment arrived to take care of our mostly dead Hostile 2 and the hopefully all the way dead Hostile 1. Tiffany and the rest of the first response team had already been carried off to Station Medical. I went the other direction, further into the council admin offices, because I needed to see her. I found her only 3 unsecured doors away, but at least it was an office without a balcony or windows onto the admin mezzanine. I walked past station security and admin personnel. They should have tried to stop me, but A, it wasn't like they didn't know who I was, and B, it was a good thing they didn't try to stop me. Mensa was watching the door, and when I walked in, her shoulders relaxed. She knew the hostiles had been secured and that the first response team had survived. She had command access to the station security feed, and she'd been monitoring it from in here. There was a security lockdown on the public and private council feeds right now, and we needed to get them restored soon, before anybody outside the offices noticed. We had to keep Graycris from knowing this attack had nearly succeeded. It would give them too much intel about what to do next. Mensa met me in the middle of the room and did the hand thing that meant she wanted to grab me, but knew I wouldn't like it. She said,
"You need to go to medical."
There was dried blood on the tunic she was wearing, and on the right knee of her pants. Hostile 1 had charged at her across the council table, and I'd stopped him literally a half meter away from her. She could have reached out and patted his head. And that was after chasing him all the way here from the transit ring, while Hostile 2 was trying to kill me. Slowing down Hostile 2 long enough for me to mostly take out Hostile 1 was what had sent the entire first response security team to Station Medical. They were just lucky 2 had been focused on trying to get past them and not slaughtering every human in the way. I said, "I can't go to medical yet. There's something I have to do first." Her expression was drawn.
"Do you need help?"
"Inda's called in the off-duty personnel. I can get you a team."
"No. I just want to make sure I know how they got onto the station."
She nodded and let me go.
So, yeah, I'd lied to her.